today's episode of the Telehealth Heroes podcast, I am joined by Dion Rambo, the founder of Telehealth Van, an organization that helps bridge the digital divide for hard-to-reach populations in the LA area. Dion, thank you. Welcome to the show, my man. Tell us about the telehealth vans you've started.
Well, telehealth vans was started about a year and a half ago. It's spun from my original company that I still kind of run, Ramble House, which I've been doing for 13 years. And telehealth van is primarily just a conduit to help a lot of the medical therapists, the doctors, the clinics, and especially a lot of my clients, which are the kind of the domestic violence agencies, the mental health agencies, et cetera, meet with their clients. So we're not necessarily an Uber that people can just call us and have a van brought out to them. We're really scheduled by the doctors themselves, our contracts with agencies themselves. And we simply go to their clients, their patients, if you will, and just add a virtual access for them to be able to meet them virtually.
So tell me a little bit about this patient population. They have a hard time coming into a clinic. So this is a way of going to where the people are. Tell us about this population.
Well, we call them in Los Angeles, we call them kind of the low income and unhoused, right? These are the ones who, you know, not that they don't have a car or don't have transportation. It's just the likelihood of getting them to come receive the service isn't the top priority on their list, you know, unless they're trying to get their medication. It's really not the top priority on their list. So especially in LA, I mean, it's important to say that this came about because of the COVID pandemic, where there was no more transportation, the lockdown, et cetera, and you still had the mental health numbers were rising, the suicide, the deaths, the domestic violence started rising. And it has to do with a lot of different factors. People were forced to be enclosed in one environment, and in the minority community, which a lot of our clients take care of, the Black and Brown, the special community, you know, they're forced to now spend more time together, right? So they're dealing with things that they haven't had to deal with before. So kids are starting to understand, wait a second, mom, daddy, you're not as smart as I thought you were, because now they knew that they're the teachers. And so now a lot of the women are forced to, especially the ones who are unhoused, they're forced to now live with violent men just for shelter. So we're getting a lot of these different things that started growing when COVID kind of unboxed all of this. What the telehealth van did was, we offered a solution where they didn't have to leave at all. You know, when we first started creating the telehealth van, we were trying to think of maybe it shouldn't be a van. Maybe we should send software into their homes. But when you consider the demographic that we're dealing with, sending an iPad to these type of homes wouldn't be a good idea, which is what a lot of our agency did. And also we dealt with a lot of the foster industry, the foster care kids, who, to give you an understanding of the foster care industry, a lot of them come from the foster care industry and they're put into jails or they're put into young prostitution, et cetera, because they're forced to be in home and enclosed in areas and they're unable to say, help, help. So the vans became that place where people can leave from where they are, go into the van and say, help, get me out of here, or I really need my meds.
Gotcha. So it's like a safe place.
Completely a safe place. Right. And that's what made telehealth van more popular. We didn't know. We just thought they were going to just be meeting and our clients were just going to do some mental health things. Not at all. These low-income populations, the things that they're dealing with psychologically, and you seeing them kind of roam through the streets, especially with the jails being closed, you're getting more people who need to see someone, and we need to make it as easy as possible for them to meet their help.
So let's go back a year and a half before you launched the first van. What was the initial inception of this problem that you were trying to solve? What was the problem that came to you that somebody asked you to solve? And tell me where that whole process started.
As Ramble House is a really just a communications company, and we do about 30 events a year. And these events are, from Eric Garcet, these are large events. These are 2,500 persons events. We were also in charge of like a lot of community events, everything that had to do with health and art in the communities. And these are also large events, 800 to 5,000 people. So with this happening and us having that type of reach from the political side and from the community side when COVID hit, and they were unable to kind of connect, right? The mental health agencies that were funded from the county were unable to connect with the community, right? And of course, I'm sure a lot of your clients know that's how a lot of the billing happens, right? For them to stay open, they have to meet with them. So we became popular, right? We created something that says, no worries, your therapist can stay at home. They're unsure about the environments from COVID, et cetera, anyway. And the vans kind of became this conduit in between. And that's what Ramble House was able to do.
So these social services, these different clinics, they're funded by the city or the state or the government to provide services to these low income and or underhoused individuals, and they get paid by how many services they provide. But when COVID hit, you saw less people coming in, and it's already hard enough to get these people to come in. This just made it even harder. So these social services groups really had to be creative and think outside the box. How do we get these people? Because our funding is dependent on it. And they come to you because you're an expert on working with this population to come up with something. Was the van the initial idea, or what was the steps along the way to go from, okay, we have this problem, to a van with a computer in it driving around is the best
solution? Honestly, I had an interview one time, and first of all, I'm honored to be here. I rarely do interviews only because I just really want to stay focused on my mission type of thing. And I wanted to make sure I didn't start, feeling the glamour of things. So I really appreciate the opportunity. So as soon as I heard of you guys, especially the Doxy side, not necessarily this podcast, but the Doxy side, I was honored. I just saw that I didn't know how the rules worked. Right. So you take someone who don't understand how the game works. We come with all the answers because we're and I used my own funds. Right. Ramble House was pretty successful. So to create a whole nother company, I wasn't afraid to put my to bet on my understanding of what to bridge the gap. And that's what kind of created the multi-million dollar company we have now, which is telehealth, was because I knew that the bridge was needed. And those in the kind of the corporate side, the board of directors, the boats that were too big to move, to the board of directors in these not the agencies, et cetera, who couldn't do it, right? They didn't have the budget for it. It just kind of created this niche for us to just slide in and do it because we didn't operate on the same rules that they had to do. Hence, one van went to a fleet.
That's amazing. So you decide, you came up with this idea, said, hey, let's put a computer in a van, drive to where the patient is. What was that first visit like? What did you guys learn from that first visit?
I think there are two landmark visits, two first landmark visits. One was when I followed them myself. So the first visit that we had, we just called a pilot, I think, for the first 30 days. Yeah. And it was a black family who lived in a motel. So you had about five people in the family living in this one room hotel. And the van pulls up, young black kid comes down, kind of like 16, a little rough around the edges just because they were living in this one room. Really dirty clothes. The mom's kind of tailing behind him, curious about why he's getting into this van. The driver stands there. He simply gets in. The mother stands on the outside. And then the door opens. And then she's called to come inside with him. So she comes inside, the door closes, and I'm looking and nothing's happening. And I'm wondering, oh my God, I hope this idea is going to work. I hope he's not, I hope they're not angry. And then they come out crying. Both come out crying, which is rare. These are strong individuals, right? They come out crying.
Right.
And they tell the driver, and Sharp is there too, right? My client, Southern California Health Rehabilitation. Right. They're there too. So they run to the family. Hey, what's going on? You guys okay? Did it work out? They went, my son hasn't had anyone to talk to in 6 months. And this is the first time he was able to vent his problems. And we get it. But anyway, that was landmark for me because although I was, I knew it would work. I really did. No one's ever done it before. But I had to act like Kobe, oh, of course the shot was going in. But I was really, I was sitting there like, we'll hope this thing goes. And that family today now has a house. That family went through the program. Wow. They qualified from seeing their therapists and their doctors and their caseworkers every week. They kept it with it because it made it easy for them. While they were dealing with life, and dealing with abuse and dealing with unemployment, the van made it easy. The van was just that one consistent thing. That was one of my largest, because now they actually have a home. We have actually been honored for that. The one that happened most recent is we just got a contract with Hearthon, California, with the city of Hearthon, which is a pretty big deal. It's about a 4-year deal. Every single day, they have 3 vans at encampments. Encampments, of course, are where homeless live. We have vans at encampments, and then we're doing vans for what's called a diversion program, which is keeping people out of jail. Right. Anyway, the vans that are parked at encampments, our first visit with that is landmark too, because the woman who came was running from an abuser. And so Oracle is building our software. Oracle's building our database. And they're actually donating their time on building it just because no one's ever done this before. So Oracle's building our database. Right. So I just happened to be on a Zoom call with Oracle, and I hear this lady walk up to this. So my people in the other office are talking on virtual. Hey, how are you? It's okay. And she's, you see this little small Mexican lady going, hello, hello, what? You know, and then, you know, the therapist comes onto the screen, and then, so I'm on with Oracle. And it's such a serious point, but I'm like trying to show Oracle, like, oh my God, the vans are parked and the homeless are coming. And she's venting about she's running from a domestic violence abuser, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, now she's in a shelter. So that first visit that we did with the motel, they're in a home. And that first guest who was running from their abuser, they lived on the street, is now been qualified to move into a shelter. So she just came back and told us that last week. So that's been an honor to see these landmark things.
Awesome. I mean, it's such a little thing. It's almost like no brainer, right? But you do it, and you go, and you're impacting people's lives. And it had you have just been like, oh, hey, this is the way it's done. You know, there's not a new way. Those people probably still be in a hotel, or that woman still be in an abusive relationship. Yeah. But by the little things that you're doing, simple solutions can make a huge impact in people's lives, which is
amazing. And I share the information. So I don't really look at it like it's my billion-dollar idea. Like Oracle calls us it, and the Merriam call it, they call us a like we're launching a software company or something. They all think we're, but to us in our office, when we're sitting around the board table and we're strategizing, we're physically trying to figure out how do we save lives. So hence is why we just daily, this is me dressing up today. I actually put this shirt on and my staff said, oh, you're dressing up today. Because we're serious. Only thing that we're focused on is what resources can we do? Right. And I think that's what telehealth is about. I think if telehealth can be looked at differently, the way we're looking at it, we're not looking at telehealth as, we look at telehealth as a resource to reach the right person. So if, since we look at it as a resource to reach the right person, it can be via a phone, it can be via an iPad, it can be via a person who comes up. So the demographic that you're going after, it's about their capabilities. So it's less about the telehealth industry that seemed to be growing, and it's more about how can you reach the demographic that when they use their cell phone, it's data-based. So they can't actually do FaceTime because it's going to eat their data up. No one thinks of that, those things, right? The low-income and those in the encampment, there's no electricity. So they're choosing, do I take this therapy session, and she's a talker, you know, or do I save it because we might need to order food or I need to save.
Right,
those
right,
are things that right. aren't considered, right? So people are just seeing the telehealth as a telehealth powerhouse. It isn't. It's not. Telehealth does not exist fruitfully within a lot of the low income and unhoused community.
So you started with a van, and you started as a pilot, and you said, wow, this is actually working. We're solving problems. And your different agencies who are contracting with you are saying, hey, this is great. We're able to connect with people. How did it start to grow from one to – how many vans do you have now?
I have a little bit over 20.
20. So you grew from one to 20 vans in just about a year and a half. Talk about that journey from going from one, a pilot, to turn into a full-scale business with 20 vans.
Well, I know, and we just ordered another 7.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
my strategy, right? And I don't bill Medi-Cal or Medicaid, which we could start. We've been offered it many times. Hospitals have told us it all the time. Hey, you can bill Medi-Cal, Medicaid with the clients that we send. But we decided to do a different route right now, which is really just focused on how do we keep things priced where it's low enough where our clients can stay open, right? We need the doctors, the therapists, et cetera, and our families can see who they need to see. So I think keeping that type of the attention based on lasting versus growing has been a good strategy for us. For example, we make sure that we're not in debt. We make sure that we can afford the vans or not. And then that way we don't have to stretch ourselves too much with trying to meet the demand because our overhead's high. Nope, we're not in debt. We make sure that when we receive the profits that we receive, let's pay off our debt to make sure that we can last. And so we have a different type of methodology on how we've been able to grow and expand. We don't buy other vans until the old ones are paid off, no matter how successful we are, no matter what contracts we have coming. I've been approached by four investors so far. Who I've had meetings and I'm just excited to meet them, but we haven't even taken that yet because we want to stay focused on keeping things controllable.
I think that's the best advice that I could give is just don't be distracted by everything else. Focus on the problem and just only do that. And you'll be successful if you keep that focus.
And understanding your community. People are great at what they do, but they don't understand their community. And it's like walking into a room with a sign, right? So if I'm a black male and I put on the sign, I'm for black, and I put that up and I walk into this large room, well, as I walk into this large room, I'm only going to kind of attract what I'm used to. I need to look at the sign and go, okay, who else can I help with this same system? Kind of write them on there and then learn about them. Oh, they don't like black ink. This population loves yellow ink, and I pay attention to that. Oh, this population, yellow ink is bad, so they're only going to need blue. Once I do that and I put the sign up and I walk out, I'm more sensitive to who I'm advertising to. I think that's important versus making everyone go, you better like black ink. You bet that's what we use. That's what I've been doing for 30 years. I think now the whole market's open to virtual. We really need to be considerate of what makes them comfortable.
It's not about you and what you want. It's about them and what
100%.
they want and need. And if you can hit what they want, you're going to be successful. If you don't, then
And then bet down on it.
you might
Then
get
bet
lucky.
down on it, right? Bet down on it. I'm trying to get one of my things in LA is really trying to get more because I'm over 20,000 small businesses in LA as well. One of my goals is to get more just minorities, black, brown, and others to get more involved in telehealth, right? This is the future. This isn't even the future. This is here. Things aren't going to change. Job levels would never go, employment overall in LA specifically would never go back to where it was. Digital is here. So it's one of those things where we really have to start considering teaming with the larger companies that are more established who has those signs and say, hey, I'm great at yellow. I'm great at yellow, and team with them and work together on kind of demonstrating the opportunities that they could. And these will open up new markets. Medi-Cal, Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera. They don't care. They just, if you qualify for certain insurances, you qualify for certain insurances. Meaning, if you can go now and just team with these people, billing is billing, right? I hate to talk about financial, but billing is billing when it comes to them. Our goal is go get more of these people. Let's save more people. So that's my philosophy that we do here at the office.
So you guys get contracts with the different healthcare providers. Is that your primary, I guess,
Well, in
source of
the
revenue
well,
for
for the last
contracts?
year, for the last year, it was mental health agencies. Southern California
The agencies would fund you guys to
agencies
go and do
would.
this.
So we found this really unique spot because remember, a lot of the mental health agencies, they're usually funded from what's called like Department of Mental Health or Department of Social Worker, Social Services, right? DPSS, things like that. They would fund agencies based on how many families. So let's say you had a contract for $60 million. Your $60 million was based on how many people you're meeting, right? So you're meeting 100 people, and that's going to equate to $60 million budget. So without you meeting them, you might not get your entire 60 million because you only met with out of the 100, you only met with 40. right? Which is what would happen.
So,
right?
Gotcha.
So that's how we were getting contracts. The problem is they didn't have a budget for a van. You have a, right. You only have a budget based on per person. So what we were able to kind of slide into is we're outreach. So the telehealth van marketed itself where we're not tapping into your contract. We're the outreach that you have to do to reach that person. So we fit into that line item called outreach. And because we fit into the line item called outreach, they could use us. And it was billable. We don't need to know the people's names. They just put them in. They could put them in as John Doe. But we're considered outreach, like doing an event.
And so, and then for every visit you do, you get paid per that visit.
Per day. We're outreach.
Per day.
Yep.
Oh, so you're just outreach. You're just going out.
We're just going around to their, they schedule in the 10 to 20. Isn't this fascinating? And it seems like.
That's fascinating.
They own the van. I got the idea from what Rambo House did. Rambo House is an outsourced marketing department. I made up Rambo House while I was homeless. Like, how can I always be used forever versus always looking for the, and I created the outsourced support. And that's the same thing with the telehealth van. We're simply a turnkey outsourced support, meaning when they hire the telehealth van, when they get that one van has a driver, the entire technology, all the vans are equipped with solar now to make sure, you know, I can control the gas, for example.
Oh, okay.
But that one van has everything that you need for your therapist to meet. That's it. It's changed a little bit now, though, to be honest with you, like the way we're doing on the military basis and the way that we're doing now with the encampments, we're providing the mental health therapist. We're providing the medical insurance support. So this is the first time ever we're hiring people full time to be the therapist, because now we're getting contracts from cities and counties. And now that we're getting contracts from cities and counties, they don't have those specialists. They have the budgets to deal with the challenges, right? It's like having COVID money. They have COVID money to give the vaccination shots, but they might not necessarily have the people who can execute it. And so that's what's happening.
Right.
With the city.
Or the space,
et cetera, right. which is like our military support is. They don't necessarily have the space or the rooms to do it. And the vans just kind of slide in there and the guests can just walk in and out.
So does the agency like have a van dedicated to them, or is it just part of the pool and just
they
like,
have their
hey,
own van? Because one of the things about our community, just the low income and the unhoused community in general, is repetition, and they need to see the same person over and over again to trust them.
So the driver and the van stay the same, and they continue
the same
to see
families,
the same over
like
again.
They stay in the same areas in the same council districts for the same clients, and that's what made them comfortable. And you know, when they see the driver, you know, when they come out of their tent or come out of their campers or when they come from their apartments, they're seeing the driver that they've been seeing for the last year or 6 months.
Gotcha.
And that's what's giving them that it's okay to get in. The vans don't go anywhere, right? So they're just sitting there the whole time while they're meeting with – the therapist could change. The agencies could change.
Right.
They know – that's one thing that people don't understand about the minority community is in the 60s and 70s – in probably early 80s, the minority community were always used to having their own doctor they trusted because they operated just within their little few blocks. That's no more. A lot of the larger companies have kind of acquired them. So if someone in Los Angeles needed to go to a doctor, they would have to go all the way to Kaiser, or they would have to go all the way to these hospitals. Mm-hmm. So there's this time frame that we've lost this immediate. What telehealth van did is telehealth van kind of gave them that consistency again. So you can have whatever doctor on the inside, but the community loved seeing that driver. They knew the driver was good.
Right. Gotcha.
They knew the technology was going to be there. You could pop a caseworker up. Mm-hmm. You could pop a domestic violence person up or a therapist. They knew they were going. The van said it's okay, so it must be okay. So I understood that from a marketing standpoint, and that helped us stand out with the consistency and building up more vans as well, that consistency.
So the driver, are they trained? Are they like a social worker? Are they like a nurse? Or is it just some random person?
Well, we do have medical assistant drivers. We never had to use that.
Okay.
We were kind of – so we pay as if we're paying a medical assistant to be in an office. We're paying the same rates as the drivers. But and I ironically, a lot of the medical assistant drivers that we have were actually homeless. So we teamed up with Pathways to bring their homeless community, people who had the resumes of the you know, they were maybe currently unhoused, but they were former medical assistants, so they're still certified in those areas. You know, one of the drivers right now was homeless for 5 years. We brought her on, and because we have the agencies that we have, she knows the community, she knows how they think, etc.
Right.
And now she, you know, she has her own condo. And I think it was like less than 6 months later. And we have this new, so that's one of the things that we're not afraid to do is hire the unhoused community to work for us and give them some stability. The second thing that we do, which is pretty unique, I'm toying with it right now, though, to be honest, is I don't want to hire based on race. So we bought a translation system. And we're coming up with a manual so they were able, people can communicate with each other before they get into the van. Now, their therapists and doctors may know them one-on-one, but I don't want to hire my drivers just based on race. If they can pass the background check, if they can pass all of these key things, they shouldn't be chosen just because of their skin color, whichever color it is. As long as they have translation items that are available right now to be able to communicate, making them safe, getting in. Because once they build the relationship up with them, with that translation device, they'll trust Lisa, you know, because they know Lisa is going to make sure that when they get out, they're going to get their little sucker and they can, which is actually very, very popular. Giving a sucker is a, you would think giving a sucker when, I think we only had a few occasions they were like, oh no, I'm diabetic. But usually people love suckers, and I got that from when my mom used to take us to the clinics when we were young, and they would give us a sucker. You always, if we don't have a sucker, this is, that's so simple. But that's one of those things that's on the sign that when you put the color, that they want a sucker. They that's kids look forward to. Yeah. They'll meet. They'll do their whole hour therapy session just to have that 10-cent sucker when they get out. Yeah. So we give those out too.
Oh, that's incredible. What does the driver do during the session?
They wait outside. They have a
They just wait outside.
A covered chair, comfortable with a tent and everything, and the entire time they're outside. The drivers just wait outside. When the session's over, the client on the inside simply pushes a button, the doors automatically open, they walk out, receive their sucker, receive their stamp because they want their grocery, they want this to count. That's a big They leave until next week or in a few days. Then the driver simply goes in, PPE, and cleans the space completely, lets it air out, and goes to the next stop.
Oh, that's amazing. And they have a schedule. Like, hey, you got to be this here, this time.
On the calendar. The calendar every day is. Yeah. And now they have their same clients, right? So people that, because they need to continually see their therapist. And now they're spoiled. They're spoiled because now the clients, they don't want to leave their house. It's really hard to get them now to get back on trains or convince somebody in their family to take them. Yeah. It's actually harder now because they love the consistency of all I have to do is walk out with my rollers in my head and I have to do my session and I can go back inside. It's much easier to bring up your visitation rates based on that.
Yeah.
And this actually works well, honestly, with high-end clients, people who need high-end clients, people who need to check up on their if they got a facelift or if they got any tucks or if they need to check on their diabetes levels or things like that. This actually works well with them because definitely the older population, but definitely those wealthy. They would love to have a high-end quality private vehicle that came to them, especially if it's just for checkups. If it's just – they don't have to – these – Like me, with people who have their time is valuable, it's hard to make your whole day around that visit. 1 hour visit is really a 3 hour day, right? Getting ready, the whole nine. So the van makes it much easier. I would rather have a telehealth van pull up outside of my office for me to do my meeting and could come back in and keep doing what I do than having to schedule it with my wife.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe for the high-end clients, you have telehealth limos.
I know. I was thinking about that. We had a meeting with, I think they were a, I forgot what kind of company it was. This is Beverly Hills. And they took me to a very different type of meeting. Took me to lunch the whole nine. and ask me, can we make a telehealth van for these high net worth clients, especially the older ones, you know, who they
Yeah,
wanted to send this out
It's
there.
hard to travel and
Quality, you know, they can step in, beautiful air conditioning, and screens are a little bit larger, you know, and they can just simply just have a quiet plush meeting, seeing how they are. How's your blood pressure been? Have you been getting dizzy? Or let me see your lips. How's that going? How's this going? Yeah, we've been getting that a lot too, transitioning into the more exclusive high-end side. So we've been thinking
I can
about
see
doing that
that.
too. We may pull off some pilot clients and give that a try too.
So what is your plan for the future of the telehealth van?
There are going to be more telehealth vans from other companies who are going to probably look at us as competitors, but we don't look at that. We look at if you're saving the community, save the community. How you use your profit margin is up to you, but let's just save as many people as we can. Our goal is to be in as many cities as we can until we're kind of overtaken. And that's my mission, is to put telehealth van in every city that we can. Right now, we're in about five, which is pretty good considering we've only been
All in the LA area?
LA County area, like LA County.
LA County,
not
yeah.
a, but today when we signed the contract, we're now going to be in different states too, Wisconsin, Virginia, and some others like that. Sure. Now we're going to have those other six states. The three we're deploying now the vans to in the whole system. So now we're able to expand and spread. I think in about a year, about thinking about two and a half years, we'll probably be a little bit over maybe 150 vans. We'll also have virtual systems that'll be in place. We're moving pretty fast. And the way we positioned ourselves, we're moving pretty fast to work kind of in a conjunction with people who are already established. We're not trying to be doctors. We just simply want to make sure the doctors can meet their patients.
Connect to the patients where
That's
they're
it. And
at.
we just happen to be where they are. That we just happen to be where they are, so we make it easy.
So I understand they use Doximy as the telemedicine platform. How did you come across Doximy and decide, hey, this is a good fit? What's your experience been?
Well, for us with Doximy, that's what started telehealth van. It's Sharp, Southern California Health and Rehabilitation, and some of our other clients were using Doximy in general in their offices. What the telehealth van was able to do, we learned from how the Doximy system, the link worked with choosing the doctors, etc. It just made it easy for my drivers because Doximy allowed the drivers. When the agencies put that set up Doximy for the agency, they kind of put in there where all the doctors can simply be dropped down of information. So when the driver, when the vans would kind of remember the regular people would live here, agencies and their doctors would be here, the van just simply went in and was able to just click on which doctor visit they had, and all the information was there already. And that was the first van we've ever had, and that's probably all the vans that we have currently, the Doximy system.
So like, the driver knows that, oh, Jane, she's going to meet with Dr. Smith, and so the driver gets the patient all set up, checks the patient in to the right room, says, here you go, and then the patient walks in and sits down and ready to see the
That's it.
provider right there. So the patient doesn't really have to do
Nothing.
anything. They just show
Nothing.
up.
The patient gets
Oh,
in.
wow.
Once
Super
the
easy.
patient gets in, and in fact, the Doximy link was simply just in Google. It wasn't a complicated piece. We just, you know, and once you went there, Doximy is pretty much set up easy anyway. But once you went there, clicked it, they popped onto the screen, or they accept it, right? Popped onto the screen, check the volume. Okay, good luck. Close the door. And that was it. Kind of the transition time of them getting in and the doctor or therapist or the caseworker being selected, it's literally less than 3 minutes.
Yeah, I can imagine it's
Just
super
quick,
quick in and
super
out.
quick.
Now, do you have a laptop set up, or how what is the actual device that you use in the van?
And that was just a large computer monitor.
Oh, that's all it is, just a computer monitor.
But I must say, I thought it was going to be that easy too. But when you turn the vans off, what's the computer's plugged into? So the technology, I had
So
to
you,
rewire
gotcha.
the entire van. We had to convert all of the technologies and all the vans. If the van's running with gas being about 450 or something in LA, you could imagine. Hence is why we had to invest in solar, so we could turn the vans off and they still have
Fascinating.
the electricity and the electrical support that all the system needs. We had to even change how the comfort of the van, because they're going to be sitting in there for a while, right? To make them feel like they're at home.
Right.
So we had to change all these things up, even the sound, right? In most cases, we give away, like we got it from air travels when you have your temporary.
So
we had to buy the ones with the microphones just in case they just wanted to be away from the screen and still be. So we had to kind of incorporate.
Right.
We lost a lot of money. We even had to learn and lose money on what software worked the best, what Wi-Fi system worked the best with the whole 5Gs, with the, remember, for the last few months, the internet kind of drops in and out. We had to do our due diligence on all of that. And so we're kind of just building that whole system up together. We've lost funds on it, but it's been such a fun ride because right now we have no competition. So it's been such a fun ride because we're able to fix things and change things up in real time and not lose a beat.
Right, right. And you create a better experience. So it's fascinating that you are thinking about the inside environment because, you know, it's essentially a mobile clinic room and you don't need two layers of seats when you're doing a visit with one person. So strip out that first layer of seats and then make it more comfortable in the sound. And it's very fascinating with the computer and the monitor you have. It needs power. Southern California is great. It's got a lot of sun. You can do solar there. What other things do you look at looking to tweak or optimize within the vans?
Within the vans, other things that we look at to make it more of a comfortable experience is, of course, the tent, right? Keeping it dark enough where they can.
So people can't see in. Or
so behind the drivers. Right. I've seen other vans that are similar and they're not that detailed. But with me, with kind of a marketing background and a community background, I know I need them to only see that face, not see anyone walking by, not see, you know, they know that their friend, the driver, is outside. They love Lisa. Lisa got their back. And they could just spend the entire time and vent to that one face. So it's not like we just tossed a computer in. I think we tried to do that in the beginning, but it just wasn't really engaging. It saved money, but it just wasn't really engaging. The floors had to be converted to make sure they're more comfortable on the floors. You know the thing about – I'm lucky because I don't own a physical hospital. And so what I would like to see happen is I would like to see the best doctor for the job, not just the only doctor there. And I think that's what telehealth is going to eventually evolve into. Who's the best doctor who can deal with diabetes for this type of woman who has these type of illnesses along with it? And they might be in Miami. They might be in Long Beach. Right. And that's what I hope the evolution of digital turns into is the best doctor for the job can meet that person. So that's what we're trying to create.
The right doctor for the right person.
Yeah, that's it. That's really what I would like to see. The best job, best caseworker for the job to meet the person. Best this. Well, you know, they might be in a whole – they might be in Europe. But they know how to deal with cancer, that type of cancer for that type of human being. That's what I hope in my lifetime I can see the evolution of that. My father just died actually, 2 weeks ago? And it's that type of same situation, right? One of the reasons I created the telehealth van was also for my mom who had diabetes. And she was inside saying, I'm just waiting for my doctor. I don't know how to use this. How do you use this? I'm trying to show her. I'm trying to run my company. I'm saying, Mom, it's easy. Call me. FaceTime. I can't do that. How do you? My doctor told me I had. So I said, Mom, one day I'm going to create a van that's going to pull the front and it'll pull down and you could see a diabetes doctor or something. And then she's, is it going to be my doctor or somebody who know what they doing? And then I thought, I get it. I get it.
She gets it.
Yeah, I was like, I need to one day see that evolution of that type of system in place. So I hope the telehealth vet itself is kind of a part of that evolution. I hope doctor offices and clinics alike can now start hiring just the best people for the job versus who's just local. And they can leverage they can leverage the telehealth industry to kind of be their hand. So that's what I hope will happen in my life.
Right, and a lot of folks are limited by essentially a convenience sample. What provider is closest to me? That's all they get access to. But with telehealth, there's really no reason. The care is becoming just as good as in person. So why not? Right now, you get people who are hyper specialized, seeing these people all the time instead of just being like, oh, this is a patient I see once a year.
It definitely opens up from a financial side, right? When now these doctors and clinics, doctors and clinics offices should look at their office as kind of a corporate office of medical management, not the actual. So I just made that up. That's actually a good idea. But that's what I'm thinking is it should be kind of a corporate office of medical management. You can have 100 doctors and therapists, et cetera, because now when the patient walks through the door, they should be able to see who's best for them, not just who's working that day, especially when you're dealing with prenatal care and preventative care. Right. Mm-hmm. It's less about if they're overworked and busy. And so if you kind of incorporated this in the beginning meeting with these virtual sides, which my job is to get my community used to it. I'm going to work hard at getting my people like my mom comfortable and more used to the virtual world because they're meeting better people. They're meeting people they don't have to explain that cough to. They've heard that cough 100 times and this is what they do. This is how you fix it. So I think that if medical offices considered transitioning, instead of trying to force telehealth into their office, they become telehealth, it can open up more opportunities and more professionals for every single client that comes through their door.
That'd be awesome. And the type of work you're doing, you're building that future you envision. And it's one van at a time, one city at a time, and eventually you've done it. And so I think it's phenomenal work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Rambo, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a fascinating conversation. And I really hope and support the mission you guys are doing. It's our mission with Doxium is to make telemedicine available to all. And you are truly serving a segment of the population who has had a hard time getting access to telemedicine. So we are behind you 110%.
I appreciate it. And this is my first ever podcast, but that's how much I appreciate you guys are doing, how you're doing it. And so I'm really honored on many levels from the Doxy, me just in general, for you guys being my first to what you're trying to do in terms of that mission of telehealth, us becoming telehealth, not just incorporating it into our philosophy. So thank you so much for your time too.
Awesome. Thank you so much.